Hello, I'm Mariet Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to live a happier and healthier life. Thank you for tuning into Calm, Clear and Helpful, the weekly podcast series which introduces you to wellness professionals, offering their expertise and assistance. Today's topic is suffering or feeling exhausted. Re-energize yourself with mindfulness and self-compassion. If you can feel that year-end fatigue is setting in, or you're generally feeling overwhelmed, or perhaps that all is not well, I trust that listening to this episode will help you find clarity and that you'll breathe easier afterwards. My guest is transformational coach and change consultant, Gail Cox from Cape Town. Welcome back on the show, Gail.
Hi, Mariette. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, after our conversation, it will be fun question time. Gail, could you please tell us more about your work?
So I was just listening to your intro, and I guess if I had to put it in one sentence, I think I really help people who are under pressure and who are tired and exhausted. And mostly they're in some kind of transition or some kind of pace, either in their life or their career. And so what I hope that I do for them is reduce the drama a little bit and help them kind of reorientate and re-energize. And I hope that my work that I do with them is life-giving rather than life-sapping. And at this time of the year, I think we all know what life-sapping feels like. And I have this phrase that I use in my practice is that I like to think that I take the headache out of stuck for people. So I hope that gives you a sense.
Yeah, the headache out of stuck.
Yes.
I like that. Now, Gail, we have recorded before, and what I love is that you like to draw universally applicable lessons from your lived experience. And today will be no exception, because during our conversation, you'll be telling a couple of stories from your life and relate them to your insights.
I will definitely be sharing.
Yes. Let's start with the first part of our topic, which refers to suffering and feeling exhausted. Would you say that life is difficult?
Absolutely. I mean, I think being human is difficult. And life is full of joy and celebration, but by virtue of the fact that we are human, we are going to struggle. And everybody's struggle is different, and they're different intensities. But suffering is part of life. And I find it quite curious that we're not really taught how to suffer. We're taught how to attempt to avoid it. But we're not really taught how to suffer. And that might sound weird, but when you start to work with that in a different way, you get to experience how knowing how can actually reduce your suffering. So life is difficult. And that's not a problem. It's part of our experience.
Yeah, when you speak about how to suffer and learning that, that sounds to me like a whole new topic.
Could be. Yeah. Could be, for sure.
Gail, you believe that we can find ways to digest stress more easily and to develop resilience, right?
Yes. Absolutely. You know, I just want to maybe pause there and just emphasize how important that is right now. I really think it's an important life skill. The majority of us are taking a lot of strain at the moment in our world, in our lives. And so more than ever, I do think that this is something that we need to spend some time prioritizing and focusing on.
In our pre-talk, you mentioned that there are two key elements which can help us to relieve stress and develop resilience, and these two are mindfulness and self-compassion. Now, these terms one does hear from time to time, but I found it so interesting that your understanding of mindfulness as well as self-compassion is different from what I always thought.
Interesting. Okay.
So let's first look at mindfulness. Can you tell us the story of how you came to mindfulness?
Oh, sure. Okay. So it was really a long time ago. So I've been practicing mindfulness for over 20 years. In different phases of my life, better and more consistently than others, because I'm a human being. But where it came from was about 22 years ago, out of personal crisis. So my son was born, and at his six-week checkup, we came to find out that he would need quite a dramatic operation at 8 months, which would involve a long surgery and a process whereby his skull would be removed and cut up and reformed on a template, because his fuchsias were closed and his brain wouldn't be able to grow if they didn't do that. So we knew this when he was 6 weeks old. And obviously it was a very big shock. So there was a massive threat and a stressor that was on us. And it was for a long time. So we went about our life. We went on holiday. We were quite pragmatic about everything. I was pragmatic. And then it came to the time of his operation, and the operation went well. But after the operation, I really, really struggled. So I had a real emotional implosion. And what transpired out of that was that I ended up with psoriasis all over my body, which is like a skin inflammation, which is incredibly painful. And I was referred to Dr. Simon Weitzman, who is a medical doctor, a psychotherapist, and a mindfulness practitioner. And the person who referred me recognized that what was going on for me was a runaway stress response. So over the period of 8 months, my system was bracing for impact. My system was focused on this threat. And then when the threat was no longer there, my system didn't know how to reset. And this is a very important point to emphasize, is that we as human beings, we're built for acute stress, but not for chronic stress. So a stressor that lasts for a long period of time starts to erode our ability to find a reset and a rebalance. And so lucky for me, I find myself in front of Dr. Simon Weitzman, and so began an incredible journey of learning how to take care of myself, learning how to manage my stress response. And literally 6 weeks after I started working with him, my psoriasis started to disappear. And within 3 to 4 months, it was gone. And that was profound for me because, you know, your skin is an organ. In fact, it's your biggest organ. So if that can happen on the surface of your skin, I was just like, gosh, there's something here. There's something here to cultivate and develop. And I felt better. I felt more engaged. I had more energy. And I was able to process and work with my stress in a better way.
That is intriguing. I'm wondering, Gail, what did he teach you, if you look back? Was it your first introduction to mindfulness?
Yes, absolutely. So I was referred to him by a psychologist, and Simon's rooms were in a hospital. So I had the expectation that I would sit down and he would take a history and, you know, give me a script. And so it was completely unexpected. We sat down, he spoke a little bit to me about, you know, my experience of stress, and then he went straight into a practice of breathing and helping me to regulate and helping me to have an experience of that in the first session with him. And I actually felt the shift, and that started the journey. And so it was a process of a relationship every week to develop some habits and to develop some practices. And then also a lot of information and sharing around what is stress actually. and how do you work with it? Because we're all stressed. And when someone says to us, I'm so stressed, we kind of nod and say, me too. But I wonder how many of us don't really understand what stress is and what happens in our body when we're stressed. So there was just this expansion of knowledge and experience and practice and relationship with him. So his ability to hold the space in a certain way also really helped with my healing.
Mindfulness is what I like to think of a fat word. So we don't all have the same idea of what it is. How would you frame it or describe it?
I mean, I love that fat word because it's such a vast topic and there's so many entry points into mindfulness. For me, I think that mindfulness is really the opportunity to learn how to be present with yourself. It is about paying attention to what is happening when it is happening. It's paying attention to how you're doing in the moment. So I suppose you could call it present moment attention, but it's done in a certain way. So it's the ability to be where your feet are, to really check in with what your experience is, and in so doing, be able to explore it in a different way and to do it in a way that's curious and is not judgmental. So there's quite a softening about it. But in the softening, there's great strength. And so mindfulness is really about waking up. Because if we're not mindful, then we're mindless. And I think we all can testament to being able to witness from a human behavior point of view what mindlessness looks like. And it's exhausting and it drains us and it saps life. So mindfulness is an opportunity to really take care of the quality of this moment. We're either living in the past or thinking about the future. And it's not that those aren't important, but it's how do I stay grounded in this moment, scoop up a bit of the past, take a look at the future, but actually live this moment right now to restore and to re-energize. And the irony is that if we take care of the quality of this moment, then this moment takes care of the quality of the next moment. So being present doesn't mean that we're not future orientated. Exactly the opposite. But it's how we move through our life and how we move into the next moment. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I'm wondering how one's body is involved in what you call taking care of the present moment.
So if you had to just take a deep breath in and a longer breath out and just be where your feet are right now. And if you can have a sense of some sort of opening in your body somewhere, some sort of responding to that. So the thing with stress is that our bodies are responding all the time to threat. And the stress response can't discern between what is a real threat, a real physical threat, and what is an imagined threat. So our stress response is built to protect us from physical injury or death. That's what it's there for. And yet what is actually happening in our world today is that psychosocial stress and threat, imaginary threat, is causing the same response. So we never really experience a rest state. So we're built for acute stress. We're supposed to activate. We're supposed to have a stress response. The problem is that most of us are walking around with a chronic stress response, which means there's no recovery because our body is responding as if we're being chased by a lion, but all we do is we're reading a difficult email or we're being cut off in the traffic or we're worried about our child. Or we look in our bank statements and wonder how we're going to make it to the end of the month. All of those things that are happening for us psychologically and socially our body is responding as if it needs to protect us from a physical threat. And so can you see a lot of that worry is about what's going to happen tomorrow or what happened yesterday? So when we can actually find a way to be in this present moment right now, everything is okay in the present moment, right? And just for a second, our system finds a way to stabilize. Just for a second, that's all it needs to reset. And the more we learn to do that, the more we learn to be in the moment, the more opportunities we give ourselves to pause and to reset, which promotes health. You know, a dis-ease in our body and in our hearts and in our minds, if we don't take care of that, becomes disease. So dis-ease over time becomes disease. And I think that's the crux of, in my mind, how mindfulness can really support wellness in your body and being in the driving seat of your stress response. So letting your body know, it's okay, there's nothing to worry about right now. And the good news is the body responds so well and it heals itself so quickly. So as you can hear, I feel very passionately about this because I've lived the experience. And I certainly, you know, that's my passion and my mission is to help people find that tool too.
Thanks for that clarity. And would you say that mindfulness has a goal?
Has a goal. I think for me, mindfulness, the goal of mindfulness is to reduce suffering. And when we reduce suffering, we can have a different quality of relationship with ourselves and with others. And I think that changes everything. So I think the goal of mindfulness is to reduce suffering and to promote healing in whatever forms they might be for a particular person or a group of people.
You've mentioned that you're very passionate about helping people develop mindfulness. How do you go about that?
Okay, so I have a practice. So I do quite a lot of one-on-one work and some group work. And I guess the first thing I do is just to meet people where they are, in the same way that Simon met me, right? So I'm kind of paying it forward. So meet people where they are in a non-judgmental way and give them space to really slow down, notice what is there for them, and to hold that for them. Because it sounds all lovely, and you can hear that my voice has a rhythm, and it sounds like this is so cool, you know, let's just all be calm. But it's quite difficult work if you haven't done it, if it's not a natural thing for you. Because in the slowing down, some things become revealed. And, you know, there's something about having a very fast-paced life that allows us not to pay attention. So paying attention can be quite a tricky experience. So it's how I hold that matters and how I set the pace. So that's kind of how it starts. And the purpose of what I'm doing is to offer an experience. I want people to have an experience. And along with that, I will give them information on what stress is, how it works, so that we know what is happening for us. And then it's about building practice, habits, practice, and kind of a rhythm of learning new skills so that it becomes an integration and a way of being.
That sounds like person-centered work, which goes very deep.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And remember, you know, it's not my job to dig up what is not wanted to be revealed, right? So I always respect meeting people where they are at and they set the pace. And the wonderful thing about mindfulness is it's so practical and so easily applicable that there's so many different things and so many different entry points, that it's actually, it is deep work, but it's also light work and it's also fun. And we also laugh a lot.
When you and I had our pre-talk, you mentioned that mindfulness is a component of self-compassion. What is self-compassion?
So you're asking me these big questions, you know, and I'm taking a pause because there's so much range and so much that we could say. But I think self-compassion is really self-love. But it's compassion. And we know that compassion compels us to act. There's something about compassion that is very action-oriented. If you feel compassion for someone, you are going to move into action, to support, to hold, to help. And so self-compassion is the ability to take care of oneself in a very active way with the purpose of reducing our own suffering and taking care of ourselves so that we have a quality relationship with ourselves. And that is really fundamentally what self-compassion is. It's how do I develop a quality relationship with myself? That's not self-pity. We're not talking about self-pity. This is gritty, important, powerful, strong stuff. It's not self-pity. It's the ability to have the quality of a relationship that you would have with a really good friend or someone that you really love and care about. And so it's about cultivating that relationship with yourself in how you notice your own suffering, how you shift the story in your mind, how you take care of yourself. So I always use the phrase, it is the practice of cultivating a kind mind and a steady heart.
Yeah, that's a beautiful description because it takes it out of that realm of vagueness, if I could describe it like that. And you have two things that we understand. It is a kind mind and what heart?
A steady heart.
Steady heart. Yeah.
So the kind mind is the self-compassion and the steady heart is how do I manage the experience of threats in my body? How do I calm my, literally slow my heart rate down? How do I work with what's going on in my body? How do I create a steady pace? Because our energy gets sapped when we are not prepared for the long haul. You know, life is not a sprint, it's a marathon. So how do I create that steady pace and how do I kind my mind so that I can be fully present and fully ready to engage in life? So it's encouragement and it's also engagement. And encouragement and engagement together, that's what enables us. That's what vitalizes us. That's what is life-giving.
I can see why you link these two, mindfulness and self-compassion, because it seems to me that the more mindful you're able to be, the easier self-compassion will come.
Exactly, Marietta. Because you can't apply self-compassion if you don't know how you're doing. So I ask people many times a day, so how are you doing? No, I'm good. Well, how do you know that you're good? Or I'm taking strain today. Well, how do you know that you're taking strain? That's mindfulness. How do I know I'm taking strain? I'm able to connect with my thoughts, my feelings. I can feel a tightness in my body. And similarly, if I'm good, I feel a strength and an openness and my thoughts, I'm so excited today, right? So mindfulness is the ability to really get to a granular level of how am I actually doing in this moment? And if I'm not doing well, if I'm suffering, if I'm having some sort of difficulty, I first have to have the awareness that that's happening. And that's mindfulness. So the first step of self-compassion is knowing that we're taking strain, knowing that we're suffering. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm just thinking that there are many obstacles in the way of befriending oneself. How do you work with these when you are helping someone develop self-compassion?
Oh, you know, this is not difficult. Let me say it in a different way. It's not difficult work, but it's extremely hard work. Because turning to ourselves in a compassionate way, if it's not something that we have cultivated, can be very, very tricky. One of the things that makes it really tricky is something called backdraft. So when we start paying attention to being tender with ourselves and healing ourselves, more comes up. You know, our suffering feels bigger. So it's very easy to default, right? It's very easy to default back to a story about myself. Remember, we're hardwired for threat, for self-critical behavior. We're hardwired. You know, these are neural pathways, depending on how old you are, that have been running for many, many years. So it takes time. It takes beginning again. It takes a real patience. And, you know, it takes skill to help someone teach this. So I think that that's really important. I feel very strongly about that. And not to be judgmental of anyone or anything, but I do notice on social media, you know, it's become quite commercialized, this idea of compassion and mindfulness. And I think finding the right person to help you through that is really important.
In our pre-talk, you also mentioned the question of having a free pass versus giving oneself a permission slip, which I found such a useful concept. Could you please explain that?
Okay. So I put this together, and it's a talk I do. It's also a workshop that I do. And I think it's a fun way to take the concepts of mindfulness and self-compassion and distill it down into practical language and a fun way to be able to work with some tools. And permission slips really comes from Brené Brown's book years ago, one of her first books, which I think was something about imperfection. And she spoke about permission slips. And so that's kind of been at the back of my mind for years. And so what I mean about a free pass and a permission slip is a free pass is really, you know, we want to avoid discomfort. So quite often if the experience is intense, we will give ourselves a free pass. We will push it away. We will say things like, I just can't deal with that now. Or I'm so exhausted, there's no time. Or even I'm overwhelmed could be a free pass. So it's almost just avoiding the pain and the discomfort, which often in the immediate next moment feels like we've had some freedom and healing, but it's very short-lived. So if you think about a free pass now, I think we give ourselves free passes all the time, right? I really need this packet of chips, or I'm so exhausted. It's okay for me to binge watch, you know, Netflix for 5 hours. And it's not that the free pass is a problem. I don't want to create a sense of judgment here. It's that we know that we're doing it. That's the beauty. A permission slip is more of a softening. It softens the resistance. It creates some space and it brings in tenderness. So a permission slip brings in mindfulness and self-compassion. So in that moment that I'm saying, I just don't have time for this now, it's about noticing that and saying to yourself, okay, all right, am I giving myself a free pass here? What is it that I actually really need? What can I give myself permission for right now? So it might be I give myself permission to rest, or I give myself permission to have a conversation with my family and create some space for myself and set a boundary. Can you see how that could be quite a different experience?
Yes. Yes, it seems as if you're giving yourself a free pass, you sort of gloss it over. And if you, while a permission slip involves really analyzing it or being present, as you say, and seeing what's really going on.
Exactly. And that is the key. You know, we want to cultivate in this work that we do, we want to cultivate mindfulness, right? We want to cultivate presencing. We want to know what's happening when it's happening, right? So again, it's not bad if we give ourselves a free pass, but to notice, oh my goodness, that's a free pass in a non-judgmental way. What might be under that free pass? That's the compassion. Like, what do I really need now? And it just softens and it allows. And in the softening, there's space, right? So there's pressure. And then we pause. What is it that we really need now? And then that opens up possibility.
Thank you, Gail. I've heard you say that you have weaved mindfulness and self-compassion over your life for 22 years.
So yes.
I'd like us to come to another story from your life, which is actually two stories, two swimming stories, one referring to your childhood and the other to your recently attending swimming boot camp in Mallorca. Could you tell us these?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's a nice story to illustrate this free pass and permission slip idea. But I just want to say something because I think it's really important. I have practiced mindfulness and self-compassion for 22 years, but I am a journeyer, a traveler like everyone else. There is no state of expertise that I have reached. I fumble, I lose my way, I'm reactive, I get stressed. And I want your listeners to really to know that, right? Mm-hmm. It's a practice that you keep going back to. And it's for anyone and everyone. So I just don't want people to think that because I've been doing it for so long that, you know, I'm perfect at it. There is no such thing. I have some skill. Okay, so let me tell you about my stories. Mm. Okay, so when I was about 10 years old, I found myself in quite a vigorous training, swimming thing for a gala. So someone must have actually seen some talent in me. I didn't spot the talent, but obviously somebody did. And so I was getting ready for this big gala. And I enjoyed the training, but the day of the gala was really difficult for me. And I didn't come first and I didn't come last. But the intense experience of it was actually too much for me. And I remember getting out of the pool and saying, I'm never doing that again. And I never did. I gave myself a free pass and I gave competitive swimming a miss. And then fast forward to this year, finding myself in Mallorca on a swimming camp with triathletes. And I knew that I was a good swimmer and I had done some home ground training here in Cape Town. And I knew I'd struggle a bit, but I was kind of like, you've totally got this. Well, 10 minutes into my first swim in New York, and I'm like, I am in trouble. I was overwhelmed. I was scared, quite frankly. And I was confused because the gap between where I thought I would be and where I was quite big. And so I had a choice. I could get out and say, listen, I'm going shopping, you guys swim. But I made a different choice. And I was like, okay, turning towards bringing in the mindfulness, this is really, really, and the self-compassion, this is really, really difficult. What are you going to do with that, girl? And so I started to give myself permission. Permission to be scared, permission to try, to stop, to get out, to get back in, permission to not be ready, not be fully ready. And it was one of the most incredible 10 days of personal growth that I've ever had. And my ability to stay completely present to the entire spectrum of that experience that I was having, from resistance to self-criticism to coming up with all sorts of excuses why I shouldn't continue, and then just coming back to what am I going to give myself permission for right now? And because I was able to do that, I stayed in the game. I swam. I did much better than I thought I would. Yes, I wasn't in the front, but I had the best time and I grew so much as a person. So those are two experiences, quite a few decades apart, of a similar experience that I had and choosing a different kind of response.
I'm wondering, when you look back at the past two decades, how has working with mindfulness and self-compassion shaped how you facilitate and accommodate others?
Sure. What a question. Look, I have to tell you that I think it's my essence. You know, I don't think it was just luck that I ended up in this space. I really think there's an essence in terms of who I am and how I am that plays really well to the mindfulness. I think in my past life, I was probably a Buddhist monk or something like that, right? And so it's everything. It's my way of being. It's how I facilitate. It's how I move in the world. And also, it's how I restore myself. It's how I stay well. And it's also the indicator and the flag that lets me know when I'm not doing well. So, I mean, that's such a great question, but I think it's my essence. It's who I am in the world, and it's the gift that I bring, and it's the value creation that I offer in the work that I do.
Yeah, so it all comes together beautifully.
Well, I like to think so, but some days it's messy and it's frantic, you know, but yeah, I think there is great value, or certainly has been for me, to develop a certain way of being in the world.
Yeah.
And I actually think that's how we change the world, right? Yeah, I think that's how we do it.
Yeah. You mentioned the workshop, the new workshop that you have. Would you like to say more about that?
Yes, so it's a workshop that I'm doing in person in Cape Town in November, and I'm going to do a few of them online next year. It's just a fun way of getting a group of people together and to explore this for themselves. So there'll be some exercises, there'll be some reflection time, and I'll take what I've discussed with you today and you know, weave it into something that people can go home with and really have conversations at home with their children, with their families, in a way that's light and helpful. And the purpose of that is to start introducing the concept of mindfulness and self-compassion in very practical, easy-to-use ways in your everyday life.
Where are you going to put information about this workshop?
So I will put it, that's a very good question. I will do it on social media, so on Facebook, and I will put it on LinkedIn, and then I have a newsletter, you know, list of people that I'll send it to, and I'll send it to you, and you can send it out as well. So
thank you.
I will send it out organically.
Yes. And then I'm going to ask you for your details now, and I'm sure someone who would like to can email you about that.
Yes, with pleasure.
Okay. So where can listeners learn more about your work or follow you?
Okay. So social media and I, you know, there's an opportunity for me to be more consistent there, but I spend quite a bit of time on LinkedIn. So if you really want to get a feel for the work that I do, go onto LinkedIn, look at my profile, read some of my posts, and then on Facebook. Instagram, I don't spend a lot of time there. So I think the best place would be LinkedIn and my website.
Yeah. And the social media, they would search for Gail Cox and then the name of your website or the address rather.
It's GailCoxCoaching, one word, .com.
Okay. And I will attach that link to your website, to the podcast, and the other info will be in the podcast notes.
Wonderful. Thank you.
For those listeners who are interested in your open water swimming boot camp in Mallorca, you and I did an episode on it, which I felt fascinating. And I'm going to put that link in the podcast notes as well.
Okay, great. Yes, it was, it keeps on giving that experience. So I really enjoyed that time with you too, doing that podcast.
Thank you. Now, are you ready for your fun question?
Okay, go for it.
Gail, if I say the word Italian, what comes to mind?
Oh, pasta and garlic and laughter and red wine.
Yeah, I must say, I think I have similar reactions to that.
And lots of fun, lots of fun.
So thank you, Gail, for offering your insights and especially for sharing about your own experience. And I so enjoy speaking to you, and I would almost like to say the mindful way in which you treat my questions. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. And I just really wanted to appreciate so much how you hold the space. Because I feel spontaneous and I feel free and I feel so welcome. So thank you so much.
Thank you. That's a beautiful compliment. And to our listeners, it's good of you to join us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast series. And if you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariet Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mart-Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.